Queridos hermanos y hermanas, dear friends, this morning we meet Jesus in a frenzy of spring house cleaning, chasing out the animals, knocking over the cages of the doves destined for sacrifice, and even overturning the table of shocked money changers. The whole system was, in fact, for the convenience of worshipers. Like religious goods stores clustered around the Basilica of St. Peter's in Rome, or clustered around the gates to the entrance to the shrine at Lourdes, it was for the convenience of worshipers. Moreover, one couldn't use the Roman coins for donations. I mean, after all, they had the emperor's face on one side and on the other a pagan god or goddess. That was offensive to use that kind of coinage in the temple. It was wrong. It was blasphemous. And here comes this wild man from Nazareth knocking it all over. What does he think he is doing? And who does he think he is? In the Synoptic Gospels, namely Mark, Matthew, and Luke, this prophetic action comes at the end of his earthly ministry. It's almost a final confrontation with the authorities in Jerusalem. A daring, in-your-face action that brought to a climax his reforming work. In the Synoptic Gospels, Mark, Matthew, and Luke, it's almost as if people said, look, Jesus, don't go to Jerusalem. It's too dangerous. But he did. And if you're going to go to Jerusalem, they said, for heaven's sakes, don't go into the temple. But he did. And if you're going to go into the temple, for heaven's sakes, don't start a fight. But he did. It just brought all things together. And in Mark, Matthew, and Luke, the complaint was, you have turned this temple into a house of thieves, cheating and exploiting vulnerable pilgrims. That was the objection in the other Gospels. You have turned this into a house of thieves. It was an issue of justice and honesty and fairness. But John's Gospel is different. It comes at the very beginning of the Gospel, right after the churning of water into wine at the marriage feast of Cana. It's a sign. And it's not attacking the greed or dishonesty, but it's dealing with something more profound. The charge that the shops and all the activity, and this is the one that talks about oxen and sheep, that all the activity changed prayer, humble prayer before God, into negotiation, into somehow bartering and buying God's favor. It's a little bit like the little kid whose mother is sick and who promises to say a rosary every day for the rest of his life if his mother gets well. There's something touching about that. There's something heartwarming. There's something wonderful. It's an expression of recognition that there is a power over which we have no control, and there is a power that controls everything. There's something wonderful about that. But there's also something dangerous, because it begins to suggest that we can buy God's favor, that some action of ours can result in buying God off or obtaining God's beneficence. God is not open to bribes. Even the most kind and humble and innocent bribe. Prayer is posture before God. as the late local rabbi Dudley Weinberg once wrote in a wonderful article. He said, why do people say God doesn't answer my prayers? Well, the problem is you think prayer is petition, whereas it's really posture before God. Humble, open to what happens. Prayer is not an action to win God's favor. And that's why John's gospel and his charge that this activity has turned the temple into a marketplace is more profound. And even more profoundly, if I can use the word again, John's gospel insists that the temple, beautiful structure as it may be, is now replaced by the risen body of Christ. That we have access to God through the body of Christ. And that even this cathedral, as beautiful as it is the place through which, within which, under whose shelter we have access to God through the community, through the church, that mediates God's forgiveness and mediates God's truth and God's revelation and God's mercy. Paul, on the way to Damascus, thrown down to the ground by the voice that says, "Why are you persecuting me? Who are you? I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom you are persecuting." That identification between Jesus, the risen Lord, and the people, the disciples, us, baptized, is profound. And it's through the community, the church, not just us and them, those people over in Rome or bishops or priests or whatever, but us, the people of God, interrelated. It's through this mystery, John wants to say, that we receive forgiveness and have access to God. Lent is a time to remember that reality. That it's through the community of believers that we have forgiveness, access to God. Some years ago, I was invited to write an article for a Lutheran publication. The question posed was, in a reconciled church, in other words, in a church in which both Lutherans and Catholics recognize each other's ministry before God, are reconciled, and finally come to heal the division that tore us apart in the 16th century, in a reconciled church, should there continue to be the celebration of Reformation Sunday? Reformation Sunday in the Lutheran tradition is that last Sunday of October that commemorates the 95 Theses of Luther. Should we continue to celebrate that in a reconciled church? And my opinion was, no, I don't think so. Because that's what Lent is for. That Lent is a celebration of a church that constantly needs to be renewed. Semper Reformanda. It's not once and for all, Vatican II and its renewing effort, those of us who've been around a while and remember its grace, it's not just that it happened once and so it's all over with. And it certainly is not that it's a matter of us and those other people who still need reforming. But the whole community is in need of constant spring house cleaning, if I can use that image again, that the community needs it. That we need to be confronted again by the mystery of Christ crucified, as Paul says, and risen. So, Lent is not merely the time for individual, personal renewal. Yes, it is that. It's a time to eat and drink more moderately, to understand that that's all gift from God, and that we need solidarity with those who do not have such blessings. Physical, material. It's a time to be more generous to the needy, yes, as individuals. And it's also a time to renew the rhythm of prayer in our life, to be kind to relatives and neighbors, especially those who are difficult to be kind to, who probably need it most. And then if we're honest, we put ourselves in that category. It's not just that. It's a time for institutional renewal. And so every single group, every single agency that's an institution should be renewed during this Lenten season. We used to say that any group that had a telephone number and a typewriter was an institution. Well, now we probably should say any group that has a website is an institution. And all of those groups during this Lenten season need to stand before the mystery of God's redeeming and transforming love. So, every parish, every insurance office, every school, every police station, every office for probation and parole, every grocery store, every supermarket, every bar and restaurant, every department store, every convent, every rectory, every labor union, every teachers group, every chamber of commerce, every association of biblical studies, every legal group, before every one of those institutions, Jesus has this kind of whip. Stands with corded whip in hand to call it to renewal and reconciliation. So, do we treat clients and customers with justice and respect? Do we take advantage of the vulnerable to make a sale of things they don't need, maybe can't even afford? Do we do what we say we do? Is the world transformed because of the work we do or the agencies we belong to? And it's not just enough to criticize during this time of renewal. It's a time to say, how can we give support to difficult jobs in our society? I often ask when I meet somebody, well, tell me, what do you do? And I know that that's not a good thing to ask because they tell me that feeds into the American assumption that we are what we do, and that's not right. Nevertheless, I keep asking, tell me, what do you do? I did it again last evening. It was a little birthday party for the Archbishop. There were people that came in from different areas. I said, well, tell me, what do you do? And the purpose of my asking is to help me understand that whatever they do is part of the renewal, transformation of the world demanded by the gospel. And so we look at all the things that are part of the headlines and the papers these days, whatever they are. And it isn't enough just to criticize. We need to do that in the light of the gospel and to recognize that the criticism is not just about others, it's also about ourselves. But we also need to ask ourselves, what can we do to help each other do the job better? Up at Woodhull, west of Fond du Lac, little community. Most of the members of that community work in the prison system in Waupun. And I asked when we had a pastoral visit, I said, any of you people, I can't go home without asking this question. Any of you people work in the prison? Oh, yeah, they said, just about everybody. And it's a terrible job. And I said, well, do you do anything to help those people not be so taken up with the underside of society that they have to work with? Do you do anything to help them? And they said, no. We never thought about it. But that's what Lent is for. So this wonderful gospel is about the renewal of all of society, not just the temple, not just them, and in everything we do, grace and mercy is available. Thanks be to God.